I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom. It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
What do you want from me? I'm not a
Goodness sake, Beth. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not America's sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
I think Texans are ready to get back to work. Texans are eager to get back to work. I think as we look across the country, the lockdowns have proven to be a serious mistake, and they hurt millions of people. They destroyed lives. They destroyed small businesses. And people are ready to get to work. We can be smart. We can be safe. We can practice social distancing. We've taken reasonable common sense steps to slow the spread of the virus. But the answer isn't to destroy millions of jobs, and the answer isn't also to keep millions of kids home from school.
You know, does it take the first... Texas making this change, Mississippi yesterday making this change, is this a domino effect kind of a situation? Because Texas is the biggest state that has done this. When Texas says, yeah, I'll go first, I'll do this, does that make it simpler for other states to remove mask mandates that they might have in place? Does that make it easier for them to lessen government-imposed restrictions on the people who are living there? I mean, I talk to so many people right now who are constantly saying, I'm over this. I'm ready to get back to normal. That doesn't mean that the virus ceases to exist. We can't will it to go away. But tweet from Governor Parson. Within the last hour, COVID-19 activity has continued to recede in Missouri for the 7th week straight. That is enormous news. And we're not talking about it. Mm-hmm. When you hear about Ted Cruz there speaking on behalf of Texas, where he represents his constituents there, and you consider that businesses are now going to be able to decide 100% what's best for them, you could still go to a business and still have to wear a mask to patronize that business. Absolutely. No shirt, no shoes, no service. No mask, no shirt, no shoes, no service. That's up to them. And if you hate it and you think that someone telling you you need to wear a mask on your body is infringing on your freedom, you have the freedom to go elsewhere. Governor Mike Parson also tweeted earlier today, Missouri has no statewide mandates. Hospitalizations have lowered to 989. Positivity rate has lowered to 4.5%. I could read you some stats from Illinois, but it would just make me sad. So we're going to talk to Bryce Hill, who will probably also make me sad in regards to the Illinois pension crisis. But talking about it means that we can address it. And that's why we have Illinois Policy on each week. Bryce, welcome back to the show. Good to have you here.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
So I'm seeing an actual number that Illinois Policy has come up with that puts the liability of the Illinois pension crisis on the individual living in Illinois. And I want you to talk a little bit about what you've come up with and what Illinois taxpayers need to know right now.
Yeah, so what we did is we looked at not just, you know, the amount of tax dollars that Illinoisans send to our state pension systems, which are desperately underfunded and have massive liabilities because of, you know, the structure of our pension system. But we looked at what that means in terms of, you know, their job prospects and the prospects for their careers that they're working towards. And what we found is that because the state budget prioritizes pension spending more than any other item, an additional $1,417 is taken out of each Illinoisan's paycheck every single year because their tax dollars aren't going to things like infrastructure or education that could actually benefit them, and instead they're going to pensions.
Zach, is it as simple as if we solve this pension crisis in Illinois, that every Illinoisan would then get that money back, or that that would solve most of, if not all of Illinois' financial problems, or is it a little more complicated than that?
Yeah, I think that would be, you know, the largest single step that we could take. It would also do more than that. So not only would fixing the pension system remove this hidden tax because fewer of your tax dollars would be devoted there, it would also offer, you know, the road to potential tax relief for Illinoisans. So not only would you be getting this foregone income back that the pension system takes kind of invisibly from each Illinoisan, but you'd also get, you know, lower taxes, or your tax dollars would be going to, towards different things. So the effect of making some reasonable adjustments to our tax system and shoring up retirement security for those who are going to be relying on the pension system really has even larger effects than the number highlighted here.
Yeah, I want you to talk a little bit about what the cost is to Illinoisans and dive deep a little bit on that, because it is the biggest issue. It is the massive elephant in the room for Illinois legislators to be addressing, but it seems as though we always end up talking about tax increases and it doesn't go to take care of the pension concern. What is this tax actually costing Illinoisans?
Yeah, so in terms of the state tax dollars that go towards the system, we're talking about approximately $10 billion every single year that, you know, your state tax dollars go towards. But then when you factor in foregone income that we're talking about here, that brings the total cost to about $28 billion every single year that is taken from Illinoisans for the pension system. And then, you know, we're talking about in exchange for tax dollars. We saw just last week, actually, that new House Speaker Representative Welch, Speaker Welch, was floating the idea of running a tax explicitly for pensions. So we talked a lot in the fall, you know, that a progressive tax was really a tax for pensions. And their new marketing idea is to try to explicitly say that and maybe get voters to trust them more this time.
So when voters slash taxpayers slash, I'm going to include pensioners in here, because those pensioners are people who are paying taxes. So if the tax burden becomes enormous, even more enormous, on Illinois taxpayers to fund this, I mean, it's being punitive to the people. It's also there to help. Where do people go to get information? Where do people go to find out more about the details about this if they want to actually affect some change?
Yeah, I would say I would start by, I think the best educational resource is IllinoisPolicy.org. You know, we are some of the only people doing this kind of research. There's also the Lincoln Lobby, which is a Facebook group of like-minded Illinoisans who are pursuing real tangible reform. And they are up to date on everything that's going on in Springfield and actually have get alerts when there's action items where they can make their voices heard in Springfield. And lastly, I would say that, you know, it's really important to stay involved on both of those fronts, because there's actually legislation in Springfield right now that would pursue constitutional pension reform and fix the system that we're talking about. So there's some real hope that we could actually see some movement on what is by far and away the largest concern for Illinoisans at the state level.
Bryce Hill is senior research analyst at Illinois Policy. Let me dig down on that a little bit more. You mentioned that the new speaker, the House Speaker Welch, has been addressing pension reform. That seems like that would be good news, regardless of how he's addressing it. However, is the way that he's addressing pension reform, is it in line with anything that Illinois Policy is doing? Is the Venn diagram, you know, pretty close? Are they pretty far apart? Do you like what's happening? What say you?
Yeah. I don't think that we necessarily agree much on what the pension solution is, particularly because he's floating a progressive income tax to pay for pensions, that where the revenue would be specifically earmarked for that purpose. But luckily for us, I don't think Illinoisans agree with that approach either. They overwhelmingly rejected the call for progressive income tax in November. So, you know, while we may not agree on what the solution to the pension system is, I think it deserves attention. And just the fact that we, as the Illinois Policy Institute, have identified it as a big issue, and that, you know, leaders in Springfield see that it's a big enough issue that they're willing to risk some political capital running a tax hike for it, I think are both positive signs that we are going to see at least some movement, and, you know, hopefully that'll be in the correct direction this session.
Bryce Hill, thank you so much for joining us today. I want to encourage people to check out the Lincoln Lobby. You've been able to, with the Illinois Policy Institute and the Lincoln Lobby, affect some real change in the state of Illinois, haven't you, folks?
Absolutely, and, you know, we're looking to do more of that. And anytime that Illinoisans have the opportunity to actually make sure their voices are heard in Springfield and take any sort of civic action, we are sure to notify everybody. And, you know, it's, I think, the single best way to keep up to date with everything that's going on and to actually make your representatives work for you.
Thanks so much for the time today, Bryce. Great to speak with you again.
Yep, thank you.
Talk to you soon. Bryce Hill, who is a senior research analyst at the Illinois Policy Institute. You can learn more on illinoispolicy.org. The pension crisis, as long as I've been covering Illinois politics on the radio, which has been for a little over 6 years now, it's been about the pension crisis. And there's been a lot of discussion around how to address it. There has been a minimal effort to actually address it. And the burden continues to grow. So much of this pension, we spend so much time not funding it. And at the end of the day, who is hurt? The people who are your neighbors, the teachers, the public workers who have been promised something that inherently is not going to be there. There is something that has to change midstream to make sure that the promise that was made to the people who are retired right now is going to be kept. And to people who are working right now, who are supposed to be receiving these pensions, are foolish if they think that what has been promised to them is going to be there. We need some honesty, a big dose of honesty, and we need to address it now before we have to, you know, it'd be a lot easier for somebody who is, you know, like my husband's a public school teacher and we're in our 30s. It would be a lot easier for us to adjust going along based on whatever the pension system is going to be for him than for people who are our parents' age, who are retired right now, who are living on a fixed income that they've been promised, that there is no guarantee of future funding. Not according to, you know, what the money that's being come in versus the deficit that has been run up there. It is a real disaster waiting to happen. And we need to be honest about who needs to address this, how we need to address this going forward, so that the people who are promised something and who are counting on it don't have to go into a situation where that is being ripped away from them. This is not it drives me insane when people have these conversations and try to pit, you know, private sector workers against the public school teachers, or, you know, any other public worker out there, because I know many, many, many people in the public sector who think that this is a racket and who are sick of it and want honest answers. So go to illinoispolicy.org if you would like to get some of their solutions and see that there is a possibility out there where we can guarantee those people who are in retirement right now that they're not going to have to fret going forward about what that pension system change is going to be. Because bankruptcy is on the table, folks, and that's a disaster, and it's never been done before. All right, Katie, you ready to ask some questions when we come back?
Absolutely.
Where'd you come across this article?
I think I saw it on a Facebook ad,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know why it was on my Facebook ad.
Oh, I know.
But it was there, and I'm like,
you're
this would be interesting
married
to ask.
Late 20s.
Annie about what you saying.
I've predetermined that I can ask Katie questions back. And she goes, oh, yeah, it's fine. And we'll see how Ryan fits in here, too, because when you have kids, when the kids come along, sometimes you plan for it, sometimes you don't. But even when you plan for it, man, it's a lot. She's got an article that says there's never a right time for a baby. But these questions may help decide, so. Too late for me. I'm on number four. Working on number four right now. Stick around. We'll do that when we come back. Welcome back to the Annie Pryde Show. Happy to have you with us here. Do we have Tim Allen sound?
I looked for it.
I don't know that what I sent you had sound.
It was an article, but yeah, the sound was like a podcast. It was an hour and a half.
Tim Allen came out and said he liked Trump because he peed people off that he was happy to see it. And then, like, so Tim Allen's got his Last Man Standing. If you haven't, if you're a listener to the show and you haven't checked out Last Man Standing, it is the best mindless entertainment you're going to watch on TV. Just watch it. Sitcoms don't get made like they used to, and it absolutely, it plays, and I love it. You're raising your hand, Ryan. Go ahead.
I've never seen the show.
Well, you should.
Never seen Last Man Standing.
You've got to look at it in the context of like a, I mean, it's like Home Improvement, but with politics, and instead of three boys, you have three girls, and it's just so good. Because in a good sitcom, you got 22 minutes of content. Every line counts. Every word counts. Mm-hmm. There's nothing extra in there, and he does such a good job at it. And he says what we're all thinking. Yeah, for
that's
sure.
That's another person that we talked about, humble people. I mean, he's funny, and he speaks his mind, but he's also someone that, like, you know, not a lot of people think of anymore that is in our realm because he is a little bit more conservative, that mm-hmm. I think is a pretty humble person that's very successful, and I like him.
I'm related to people who, after the election, couldn't stand watching the news, and I think maybe they've stopped listening to my show for a while. Don't do that to me, people. I'm here with you. I am standing by your side. Stick with me. I'm, like, very closely related to these people. And it's like they don't watch Fox News at night anymore. And it's not specifically Fox News, although maybe at the time that had a little something to do with it. But instead of watching that, they watched, like, 3 hours of episodes of Last Man Standing on CMT. It's kind of scratches the same itch. So it's kind of weird. I highly, highly, highly recommend it. And especially watch when you're watching it, if there's a way for you to see when the episode aired, it will help because the politics will be very current to the time it aired. Like, there will be Hillary comments, there will be Obama comments, there will be Trump comments, there will be Mitt Romney comments. I mean, like, going deep into the realm that you and I know, and he just makes really common sense statements, and you don't get to hear that anywhere. Last Man Standing, it's the name of the show. It's like running on reruns on 8 different channels and still live. I think it's got a few episodes left. All right, Katie, let's have it.
So this article, as Annie mentioned before, is called There's Never a Right Time for a Baby, But These Questions Can Help You Decide. It's from NPR.
I don't know if I agree with the premise. I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, that's kind of what sparked my interest. I happened upon it on my Facebook. It was an ad, so I clicked on it, of course. And
sucker.
Clicked on it. Yep, now they got my information.
Now I know everything I need to know about starting parenthood.
The title
from a Facebook ad
threw me off too, but I thought it'd be funny to ask you these questions. Yeah, so like NPR was asking some baby experts, and they answered honestly and kind of gave their background knowledge on some of these questions.
Does it tell you what you have to do to qualify to be a baby expert?
It does not. It does not. It says doctors. So there we go.
All of which have no children.
Yes. I am super skeptical, but commence.
Okay. So the first question is, have you faced your feelings honestly?
babies.
Here we go. To be absolutely honest about what you want in the world is terrifying, says writer Nell Frizzle. Not to be associated with
Nell
Mrs.
Frizzle?
Frizzle.
We're listening to baby expert Nell Frizzle.
She is the author of the new book, The Panic Years. Mrs. Frizzle.
She ride drive a bus?
If you admit to someone there is something that is burningly important, you then have to confront the fact that not getting it will make you desperately sad. But without admitting what you want, how on earth are you ever going to get it? Says Nell Frizzle.
Parenting rule number one. It doesn't matter what you want. Like,
what you want out of the equation.
What you've accomplished up until that point, you think you know you. You have a kid. You didn't know you. You knew the previous version of you. But what you want as a non-parent and what you want as a parent are entirely different. You do sacrifice things, but for every sacrifice you make, you fill that hole 10 times over. That's my experience. That's not everybody's experience. But that's my experience. I'll go on the record to say I had my first kid when I was 25 years old. Mm. So I was young. Mm-hmm. And I had my second kid when I was getting close to Katie's age. So I was super young. Did I want to do a lot of things that I didn't get to do? Yeah. But I was also broke. So it's not like I had the world at my fingertips. I didn't have any money. So it's easy. I don't know. What do you think, Ryan?
The sacrifice of having a kid is something you absolutely can't prepare for. So don't even worry about it. You just got to do it. And it's thrust upon you. Like, you have no choice. It's going to happen. So when you have the kid, just prepare yourself. Well, I said, don't prepare because you can't, but do prepare. But there's really nothing you can do. You just do it and you experience it. And, you know, everything this article will say will probably be both true and also like, yes, but you got to just do it.
Mm-hmm. Next question.
What was the actual first question?
The first question is, have you faced your feelings honestly? So I don't know. Yeah, that's very vague. The second question is, do you have a support network, including friends, family, and even colleagues? Consider how support will fit into your current lifestyle. Will parental leave be available at work and how much? How will childcare work and what will it cost? A support network includes culturally competent healthcare providers. And so it's going on.
Culturally competent?
Yes. And healthcare providers. So
do they have Dr. Seuss books?
It goes into people of color face worse outcomes for infant and maternal mortality due to systematic racism.
Oh, no. You've got to be kidding me.
Yes. This portion of the article is saying, do you have people that can back you up if you don't have the right healthcare provider that can help you with those instances?
It's absolutely something that is important to know that you have a team surrounding you. It does take a village, so to speak, but you have to, it's your child. It's your responsibility. If you pay attention to what's going on in the world today, the government is just ecstatic at the thought of stepping in your place to raise your kids and to tell them what they think they should know. So you better have the cojones on yourself to make sure that you know that even if you don't know the answer to it, that you're going to pursue said answer until you get one that is satisfactory. It is important to have a strong support system around you. But it frustrates me in the context of where they took that conversation about suggesting that it's different by culture. Here's the problem, folks. If it is different by culture, then we are valuing the lives of different cultures differently. That's a very dangerous conversation to have. You can look at the statistics. I think it was in New York State, maybe a couple years ago, there were more Black babies aborted than born alive. It's insane the way we address the value of life, to where we would say, let's say that a woman were to get pregnant, and maybe she's not surrounded with the support that I personally have experienced. Does that mean that she should abandon ship on that situation? No, because absolutely her child's life is as important and always will be as valuable as any child that I would carry or that somebody else in a different set of circumstances would carry. So when I hear it take that turn, from Miss Frizzle or whoever it was.
This is a different person. This is Saida Pepra. She's a licensed clinical psychologist.
Okay, so from Miss Pepra. Is it important to have a support system? Yes. If you don't have a support system, go find one. Go find one at a church. Go find one at a community organization. Find one, because your life as a mother and that baby's life as a human being existing inside of you, if you're not talking about should I have a baby? If you're talking about should I keep said baby, when you start introducing these conversations about the cultural differences and you look at the statistics surrounding abortion in this country, it is almost genocide. It is heartbreaking to look at the imbalance of culture and race in how we choose to push the value of these kids. And so I will say you should not enter into this situation if you don't have a support system. But if you find yourself in this situation, find a support system. Call me. Mm-hmm. I will be your support system.
Call Thrive. Don't they help out with those things too?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thrive and on the Illinois side of the river, Mosaic is a great, great organization, all supported by Vitae Foundation. There's just so many things out there, so many places you can go that will support you and guide you and provide for you and get you on your feet. It's just unbelievable to me how quickly we can dismiss this stuff. All right.
Just real quick. Mm-hmm. Does it drive anybody else crazy when you hear comments like that, that really are driven more by economics and they make them about race? Because I remember the same conversation happening about who would get the COVID vaccine first. And they made it about race when really it was about if you had more access to healthcare because you were wealthier. It had nothing to do with that issue, but they've made it about that issue and they do that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is the big mama. This question, I feel like...
What'd you call me?
not you. But this is the big question that I don't know if there is a right answer to it. Did you assess your finances? Money is a big concern for most prospective parents. From the cost of the nursery to paying for college, it's a tall order and a giant tab.
Just a heads up, if you're having a baby on whether or not you can pay for said baby's college, that's not a question. I mean, that's not something... I like listening to financial experts who give varying advice, but they're like, don't fund your kid's college education if you haven't appropriately funded your own retirement. I'm sure that there are people out there who have differing opinions on that, but the idea that you need to pursue some sort of financial beyond stability in order to afford kids, you're never going to know what life is going to bring at you. And when you have kids, oh my gosh, let me tell you about some stuff going on right now in my house. Like these children are expensive. They're expensive when you least expect them to be. When you incur a cost, especially if it has to do with like a health situation or whatever, you don't have a choice. You can't not do it. You have to do it. Is it good to be financially stable? Yeah, but I can tell you that we provided for our son at 25 years old and 26 years old, and he was just fine because we lived within our means. And we've been able to, you know, we've grown a lot since then, 11 years later with this child. And I actually think I'm going to buy this kid less stuff than I bought the other one because I know better now. But it's, you know, it's ridiculous to think that it's more about living within your means. Like, are you living within your means right now? Because if you're not, it doesn't matter if you have kids or not. You're not being a responsible grown up.
Mm-hmm. I just spoke with a friend at her baby shower, and that was a question. You know, she was saying, there's never a right time and you're never going to have all of your finances together to have a baby. So that's what she decided with her husband. It was just time. They wanted a kid. But I just thought that was an interesting thing because that's what holds a lot of people back, I'm sure.
If you don't, if you want to have a kid, you can absolutely make it work. They don't require much. Corporate America and consumer America will tell you that they do, but they don't. They don't require much. They need love and affection and commitment from you. That's the bottom line.
So I said there were five, but I'm just going to skip one of them and go to four since we have to go to a break soon. Do you know that this is your decision, Annie? And there's no right or wrong answer. Nell Frizzle says, whatever you do, there will probably...
Is Nell a woman?
You know, I'm assuming it said... I believe it said she sometime in this article. Okay, so...
Miss Frizzle
says, whatever you do, there will probably be some second thoughts. After some time with an indecisive partner who finally came around, Frizzle, she said, that has a toddler now. It is a woman. But she remembers what it was like to worry that someday she'd look at moms with their strollers and feel like she was missing out. So make sure her advice is saying, make sure that whenever you make this decision, you know it's your decision.
Yeah, I mean, obviously.
Right. She says, we are also scared of regret, but I can tell you that as a parent, you do also suffer regret. You sometimes look into your own, what? Oh, she says, okay, so sometimes you look into your own life and say, what the heck have I done? What is going on? So I guess Nell Frizzle, she might have.
I think that maybe Nell Frizzle should have read this article and asked herself these questions.
I'm like, Nell, are you regretting something?
No, you know, when it comes time to be a parent, if you are planning it, you ask yourselves a lot of questions. But, you know, like I said, sometimes it's like seeing Sue's puppy and you had a puppy a little while ago and you see another puppy, and you're like, oh, I love puppies. And you probably don't remember the waking up in the middle of the night. I mean, puppies are hard work, making sure they pee outside and you know, attending to their every need. Babies even more so. You do forget about some of that stuff, but it's just there's something about being a parent. It changes your outlook, and as much as you think that you're going to prepare ahead of time, as much as you think that you're going to be ready for it, you are going to have regrets. You are going to have, you're going to second guess yourself, but you're also going to have highs that are higher than you ever could have expected before. Same thing with marriage, any commitment, same thing with a job that you decide to take. If you're choosing between two or changing careers or whatever, you're always going to second guess yourself. And if you're not, you're probably not paying enough attention.
Mm-hmm.
So Katie, are you ready? Did you decide?
Not at this moment. You know, puppies? What? I'm having a hard enough time trying to find a house right now, let alone anything else going on in my life. I can't do it.
Let's get one of those extra bedrooms for you in a house. For yes. Sure. Let's take a quick break. We'll figure out what we missed when we come back.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Happy to have you with us.
If you missed the last segment, then you can go back and listen to it on radio.com and rewind. But you can find out if you too are ready to have a child. According to NPR.
That's how you should decide, yeah.
Really, the lead should be, no, you aren't ever going to be ready to have a child.
Right,
that's the way it is. Yep. It's never going to be the right time, which is, I say, go start families and have big families. I'm a big fan of that. All right, each day or throughout the course of the day, we're going to try to do a little segment here called What I Miss, because I never play all the sound Katie gets me, and she gets to pick some things that she thinks that I just errantly and irresponsibly left on the table.
Hey, What I Miss.
So, all right, Jimmy. This first clip is from Mr. Jimmy Kimmel, and it is about cancel culture.
There's a wok-it in my ethically sourced sustainable pocket. No eggs or ham. That's a vegan thing, I guess. And Yertle the gender fluid turtle. And other stories. This is how Trump gets reelected, by the way. Cancel Dr. Seuss, cancel Abe Lincoln, melt down Mr. Potato Head's private parts and throw them at the Muppets. This is his path to victory the next time around.
You know, he's right. But it's always about Trump with these people. Good grief. Like, I voted for the guy twice. He's not on the scene right now. And the people who keep bringing him on the scene are obsessed with him. They can't not talk about Trump because Trump is under their skin so incredibly much. Just think about it. The people who talk about this man the most, they can't quit him. And it's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad to hear the left acknowledging cancel culture, because for so long it was, either brush it under the rug or it didn't exist. But now they're actually talking about it. Maybe something will change. I'm glad to hear it.
So this is a cut, Annie, that you wanted me to pull. It's Leo Terrell on Sean Hannity's show. It's a two-parter. I'm going to play this first part for you.
You know, I just heard rhetoric. This is a continuation of the program that we had on your radio show. This professor will not tell us who's been harmed by these books. Let me give you some historical context. As a teacher, as a civil rights lawyer who knows what discrimination is, those books are historical books. Those books talks about the weaknesses, the flaws of this country and how this country has grown. I asked you on the radio show. I asked you on national TV. You name me one person, first and last name, who's been harmed by any of these books. You cannot do it. You talk about racism. You tell me where this racism exists. The city, the state, the person in charge. How dare you come on this program and talk about racism? Talk about these books. Now, I'll ask you right now on national TV. Give me the names of the people who have been harmed by these books. First and last name, so we can find out. Because I don't think you can name them. Go ahead. Name them. On TV right now.
I think it was Julian Bond who said that America literally translates into...
Oh, so there we go.
Yeah, Leo. I mean, he's so right. Like, who's being hurt by this? And if something is deemed, I don't know, what's the word, problematic, then have a discussion about it. Don't make it so that it never... put it in the context that you believe it deserves, and chances are different people are going to believe there's different contexts. Did you want to play the second clip of that?
I sure do.
Go for it.
We just heard from Michelle Obama and Barack Obama. Everything you need to know, you can learn in a Dr. Seuss book. Now, Leo's asking you a question. Can you name any specific people harmed by these books?
Sure, I can name the black community that has been harmed by this book. If you're asking me if I'm going to talk about
Amir
Johnson,
you don't say that. Do not say that he's been hurt by the black community.
How about we talk about books like The Sneetches that talk about...
You don't represent me. For you to sit here and say that is a lie.
I am definitely not trying to represent you. You are right.
You don't speak for the black community.
So when you hear these people canceling things and they're out there speaking on behalf of the oppressed... And you hear people saying, you don't speak for me. Doesn't that put a crack in the entire thing? Wait a second. Are we suggesting that your demographics don't make you a monolith? I'm absolutely shocked. There's so much of this stuff out there right now. It's just unbelievable. Mm-hmm.
I just hate to see Amazon also starting to ban books beyond, you know, the Dr. Seuss thing. I mean, that's literally the digital version of Fahrenheit 451 starting to happen. It used to be an open forum. If you don't agree with the book, don't buy it. But... Mm-hmm. Now they're banning them, and it's the centralization of power has got to move away from some of these companies.
You hate to see it. This next one is from Jen Psaki, who we haven't been seeing a lot of her press briefings, but I thought that this question and her answer was,
I've been hiding.
Yeah.
It sounds like even if unintentionally, you're sending the message that these migrants can't come, they just got to wait a little bit longer. Is that the message you're sending?
Well, we've been also clear, as he was yesterday, the majority of people who come to the border are turned away. Even undocumented, even kids who come in at the border, unaccompanied minors who come in. And we have emphasized time and time again, we want to keep them safe. We want to treat them with humanity. They are not guaranteed to stay in the United States. They still go through the processing. We just don't want to send them back, and the consideration of whether they can stay here through what is a possible through our laws. It is still a difficult time. It's a difficult journey. We are not encouraging people to come, but we also believe differently from the past administration that we are not going to turn away kids who are under 18.
I want to hear from Joe Biden. Put Joe Biden in front of a microphone and the press corps. That's all I have to say about that.
I totally agree. Where is he at, and why has he not been speaking about any of this?
I mean, we know the answers, but still, would like to have them. Go ahead, Katie.
This is from the mayor of Jacksonville, Mississippi, on the mask mandate no longer being in effect.
When we find that we are eliminating the mask mandate, then we are putting more people in jeopardy, and consequently can see the numbers rise. And when we see those numbers rise, then we will have to make the decision of how we operate an economy in the presence of COVID-19. That is what has led to the restricted businesses in the first place. And so fortunately, the city of Jackson has the ability to be more restrictive than the state. And so we will maintain our mask mandate. And that is an effort not only to protect lives, protect families, but to protect businesses as well.
Slow clap, your move, J.B. Pritzker. Step up to the plate and get away. Go away. Stop ruling our lives.
It's still government. I still would rather the businesses decide whether they're going to allow mask mandates or not, even if it's on a lower level. But I'm glad to see that, you know, Florida DeSantis is at least standing his ground.
This is our last one from Marco Rubio on foreign leaders and how they view the United States of America right now.
But I also think we have to understand something. I mean, if you're a foreign leader and you're watching this stuff, they're going to make their own assessments about what they think they can get away with. Are they dealing with a weak leader? Are they dealing with someone that really doesn't have control of the situation? Is he just an instrument and a puppet for the radical, you know, out of control lunacy of the far left in his party, and they're just using his presidency to sort of achieve these things that they've been trying to do forever. And I think there's a lot of, met with the president of Mexico, I believe it was today. There's no way they leave that meeting feeling like they're dealing with a strong leader.
Yeah, we don't leave our meetings with him, which happen with teleprompters in middays. It's probably right before he puts another log on the fire, but also after he's had his midday nap. And do you feel like you're dealing with a strong person leading this country? It sure doesn't feel like that. And do we want confidence that the person who's having these negotiations, you know, the person who was elected to do it, not the people who have been appointed around him that were not elected? Did we trust Joe Biden? Is that why we elected him? Did we just not trust Donald Trump? Is that why we didn't elect him? One way or the other, you cannot watch Joe Biden present his information, present the news of the day, whatever it is that he's bringing to the table when he's having these speeches, when he releases new information. It doesn't look good. So I can't imagine that it's looking a whole lot different behind closed doors. All right, Katie, thanks. That was good. I want to make sure that you check out the podcast. You can go to radio.com. If you're not a podcast person and you want to check out a place, you can go to radio.com, type in the Annie Fry Show, and you can see the podcast there and subscribe. In case you missed anything, you can get our interviews that are cut up there, but you can also get the whole show. And if you are a podcast person, you get podcasts elsewhere, just type in Annie Fry Show there. Hopefully we'll pop up and become a subscriber. Stick around. The Dave Glover Show is coming up next. What do you want from me? I'm not a
married sweetheart. T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with 3 friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app. Thanks to Republic Records. This is a national contest.